My name's Dr. Scott Mitchell. I've been on with you before. I'm an emergency medicine doctor based in Guernsey in the Channel Islands. I'm also affiliated with, well, a couple of groups. Now, one is the FLCCC, which is the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, which is a group of doctors that were set up around about March last year, just looking at what treatments we could bring in to reduce the morbidity, and mortality from COVID-19. And I've also most recently been working in conjunction with Tess Laurie, who's a researcher and kind of someone who has contracted by various organizations within probably particularly the health service and the WHO to develop guidelines for various health conditions. And she got interested particularly in whether ivermectin is a potential therapy for COVID-19 after hearing my colleague Dr. Pierre Corey testifying before the US Senate. That was in early December, and she ran her own analysis of a number of studies, kind of finding that there was some therapeutic signal that ivermectin is potentially of benefit in treating and reducing the number of deaths and progression of illness in COVID-19.
Okay, so there are some of these. I mean, chloroquine again is an anti-parasitic drug, which Trump was saying, "Oh, this is going to, cure people of COVID," and he was really pilloried for that. How is it possible that something which is an anti-parasitic drug, which nothing to do with the normal sort of coronavirus, common colds, and things like that, has some kind of effect on COVID or on viruses? What is it that's going on here? Because this is a drug that's not designed for this sort of thing at all.
Yes, of course, and some might say, "What are we on about? Promoting this drug?" You mentioned Trump bringing up chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine. That was early on in the pandemic, perhaps nearly a year ago. And we have to look at how potentially other drugs that have been around for years, might be effective against this new virus. So people will be looking at what might be effective, first of all, in the lab. So if you have SARS-CoV-2 virus in the lab and you expose it to a drug or an agent and see if it's effective, that might give an indication whether it's going to work in the human body. And that was seen with hydroxychloroquine to some degree. However, looking at a number of studies overall, unfortunately, the therapeutic indications have suggested that that hasn't really panned out to any great degree, that it isn't particularly effective, particularly the big study that looked at it in hospital as part of the Oxford Recovery Trial. That's the group that found that steroids were particularly effective in reducing deaths from COVID-19 in hospital. But otherwise, there might be some slight indication that hydroxychloroquine, when given early, might have some effect, but generally the signal is not very great. So onto ivermectin, which is a different type of drug, but again has some similarities in that it's an anti-parasitic drug. There was a Australian study looking at the lab back in, I think, April last year, which showed it reduced the amount of virus in cell cultures by, I think, something like 5,000-fold. Great, that's in the lab, but we then, as with hydroxychloroquine, it doesn't always translate from within the lab that something is going to work. You could, as Trump suggests, you give bleach you could pour that into a test tube and it'll kill everything off, but it won't do, it'll cause more problems if you inject that into a human being. But towards the end of 2020, maybe from October onwards, we were seeing a number of studies come out from around the world, from South America, from Iran, from other countries as well, suggesting that people giving people that were given ivermectin were progressing to less serious disease. And there was even a study in out of Florida which showed that patients given ivermectin in the hospital were doing a lot better than those that weren't. And we've had further studies since that have really confirmed this signal. These aren't big studies like the Oxford trial, of course, but when you add them all together, we're seeing the same therapeutic effect.
So what about your paper on this, or a paper? I know you'd be rather exacerbated, surprised, bemused that an article really, which is a peer-reviewed scientific article about this, the frontiers of pharmacology, has been rejected. Now that's interesting. How, for a start, has it actually been peer-reviewed, and what is frontiers of pharmacology?
Okay, so our group, the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance, has looked at all these papers and written a review article really to summarise the evidence that, yes, ivermectin may be a therapeutic against COVID-19. So we submitted that back in December. It underwent, I think it was the 18th of December, it underwent peer review. Peer review is a process where kind of experts or people with expertise, yeah, similar knowledge or expertise in the field, will look at the paper, see if it has some accuracy, consider it for any errors or whatever, and feedback to us before it may be accepted for publication. So there were four peer reviewers. I understand two of these were actually from the FDA in America, the Food and Drug Administration. So they submitted their comments. We amended a few things that they thought might be needed to do. And we were told, I think it was on the 13th of January, that the paper was accepted for publication. And Frontiers of Pharmacology, which is a fairly major journal with lots of different subtopics, pharmacology, respiratory, whatever, had accepted the article. And the abstract or summary was put up on their website saying provisionally accepted pending, well, they have to format the article, type it up in their own format so it gets published properly. So that was the 13th of January. And we had mutterings since that our article had been put on hold for some reason. And despite inquiring with the journal, no clear reason was given why that might be. So we were getting suspicious something was going on. And a couple of days back, we suddenly, without any sort of warning, we were told that the article has been rejected. And I've got it up in front of me. The reason for this, despite the peer review process, was that there were objective errors in the methods, applications, or interpretations were identified in this manuscript that prevent further consideration. And further on, comment was, a reader raised concerns about this paper during the provisional acceptance phase, during which an advance abstract of the paper is available online. Our research integrity team opened an investigation during which it was determined that because of biased representation of previous results, this review article should have been rejected. A review article should provide an objective and balanced perspective as per our author guidelines. They give a link to that. By rejecting this article, Frontiers takes no position on the efficacy of ivermectin in treatment of patients with COVID-19. So it seems someone, well, they mention a reader, has raised concerns with the journal. They have not informed us who this reader might be, but I think we all have some suspicion that this may be someone who has other vested interests, that the information on ivermectin shouldn't get out and be suppressed.
Any idea who that might be?
Someone or some organisation that has some other interest to suppress this information. Like, I'm not anti-vaccine, but it has been suggested that if there is any other therapeutic other than the vaccines would not be authorised emergency use authorisation.
So, okay, so there's quite a lot going on here, yeah. Scott, isn't there? First of all, we've got a treatment. In fact, we've got maybe more than just than these two treatments, particularly ivermectin, for COVID, which could potentially have saved. I mean, we're talking here about, you know, even just in the UK, potentially tens of thousands of lives, which hasn't been deployed for whatever reason. And I think we can kind of speculate a bit about what the reason is. Just trying to find the Daily Mail article where you're interviewed about this by David Rose on the 25th of February. The headline is "Drug Used to Treat Lice and Scabies Could Cut COVID Deaths by Up to 75%, Research Suggests." That article does not appear on the Google search anywhere in the first couple of pages. But then if you put it into Bing and other search engines, which are much less used than Google, you'll find it's the second result that you're looking for. So Google is very definitely and obviously and unquestionably suppressing that information to make it so that people are less likely to find it if they're, shall we say, naive enough to trust Google. And now we've got this as well, which is this peer-reviewed article being really inexplicably, without a proper explanation. I think that they're saying is that your interpretation of the previous test results is biased. It does seem as if someone is trying to stop information getting out about ivermectin, even though it could be a lifesaver. So that is potentially, I mean, obviously knowledge is power. If doctors have got this information, they may be prescribing it. And what I've heard anecdotally, I'm not sure if you've heard anything similar, is that there are actually specific protocols for dealing with COVID patients. And if doctors stray from those protocols, they can be sanctioned in one way or another. It might just be a slap on the wrist. But obviously that ivermectin doesn't feature in any of those protocols. So a doctor really should be able to make up their own mind about what's good for somebody and then to discuss and reason with the individual who's sick about what the treatment should be. And apparently that isn't happening with COVID. In this sort of emergency situation, you've got these protocols which are being used right across the National Health Service. So anyway, what do you make of first of all what I was saying about the prescribed treatment by the NHS and the government, and then secondly about the suppression of this information? It looks pretty obvious it is being suppressed, Scott.
Every doctor has the right to treat the individual patient, and drugs are listed in the BNF, the British National Formulary, and every drug is generally given a license to treat a specific condition. However, it is the individual doctor's right, if they want to prescribe a drug off license, say, to use something that is not listed to treat for specifically. Ivermectin specifically is listed in the BNF, but interestingly enough, it isn't licensed as an oral medication in the UK to treat anything at all. I think, unfortunately,
hang on. Not even the parasitic, as an antiparasitic drug for the gut or something.
No, it's licensed as a topical medication used to treat skin conditions. But if you look at the specific entry on ivermectin, it says unlicensed, and it's actually not got a NHS indicative price and has to be ordered specially. I think the source is from France, and the drug name Stromectol. So it's not readily available in the UK.
So what about the suppression of the results then, whether it's by Google, by, you know, the wise sages of Sage, looking at the you know, what can and cannot be done, and also this peer review paper?
So the suppression of information has been quite interesting and, dare I say, frustrating during this pandemic. Almost any post, if you mention ivermectin, if you put that up on Facebook and YouTube, it's often taken down within any time, even if it's put up by a doctor or a group of people who are medically qualified, which is quite unbelievable.
Hang on, because maybe Mark Zuckerberg is a qualified medical doctor of many years' experience.
Maybe he is, but I've yet to see his qualifications.
I'm saying there, of course, is that what you've got here is people who are not medically qualified censoring information from people who are medically qualified.
So I don't know if this is like bots or an algorithm that takes these down, but someone must have flagged up the word ivermectin at some point as something that they'll automatically or otherwise take down. Ivermectin hasn't been not known about in the UK before, because I had contacted one of the members of Sage back in the middle of November saying, when we'd got the draft of our paper and forwarded it to them, and really nothing heard since. I understand it has been brought up in Parliament, particularly with the help of David Davis.
Hang on, sorry, because if you've contacted Sage, surely, you know, with something which is a potential cure for COVID, surely they'd be, phoning you straight back and saying, what is it you've got? What have you found?
Yeah, I think cure is a bit of a strong word, but anything that can reduce the impact of this disease and, you know, perhaps, well, in three independent reviews, possibly reduce the deaths by 75%, you'd think they would be interested. It makes one question why they're not interested.
Well, what possible reason couldn't they? I mean, surely that's what they're there to do, to spearhead a response to this pandemic. And, you know, one of the things that if you're coming along with a drug that may have a 75% life-saving impact, they would have to be interested, surely.
Yeah, you would think Sage would be. I wonder about social media, who their backers are. You know, they have investments from, I suppose, major companies and their advertising and whatever. But the only competing interest against this medication is vaccines. Now, I know Oxford have said they're not producing the vaccines for any profit, but Pfizer, Moderna, and as far as I know, Johnson & Johnson are. So if there's something else that would treat this disease other than the vaccines, do they have a problem? I'm just suggesting that. I'm not saying there is, but what else is there to think?
Do you want to just sum up this suppressed article then? Because I think it'd be really nice to get some of the, I mean, for those people, because I think many of us are almost feeling like we have to be our own doctors now, learn how our immune system works, learn how to beef it up, learn, you know, what sort of things can make it fall down. because we're getting so much. Basically, what we're getting on the news bulletins, it seems to me, is a kind of hard sell for a vaccine that actually is an experimental vaccine. And I particularly, personally, in my age group, I'm very, very unlikely to have any real problems with COVID. So if I'm going to have a vaccine against it, then obviously I want to know that I'm not part of some sort of test as a human guinea pig.
Well, the vaccines have been through up to phase three trials, particularly the Pfizer vaccine, I think, involving about 40,000 participants. It's up to everyone to decide that whether they want the vaccine or not, look at the data and come to decision on their own risk. But as I think, as I mentioned when I spoke to you before, there are two things we don't know about the vaccines. That is long-term data in terms of how well it performs in the longer term, and how are there any safety issues that are going to come up in the longer term. I think we just need to look at that ourselves and come to a decision whether, you know, are you at high risk of getting COVID illness on your risk factors, whether that be your age, diabetes, obesity, etc., and decide whether you want the vaccine or not.
Okay, what about the article then, the rejected article? Can you just give us a brief summary of some of the technical stuff that it comes to, the, you know, a kind of conclusion, if you want, and then also where people can get hold of it?
I'll have to send you the link to the article because, as it's been deleted from the Frontiers website as of a couple of days ago, but it's still available on the FLCCC website as well as a preprint server. As a summary, it goes into a review or a summary of the number of studies that have looked at using ivermectin as a prophylaxis. Prophylaxis is if you've been exposed or want to prevent developing the illness, in early treatment, and also in later treatment in hospital. And there's also been some limited studies in giving ivermectin to people with so-called long COVID. And the, as I mentioned, over three independent reviews, we think that ivermectin may overall reduce the risk of death by 75%. The effects may be less once you're in hospital post-COVID, you know, the long haulers with chronic post-viral symptoms, there's some signal, although there's not been any great studies, that it may reduce or alleviate those symptoms as well. So that was the article that I say, the paper that we wrote and was accepted, peer-reviewed, and suddenly, really without warning or explanation, taken down and said they're not going to publish it a couple of days ago.
Yanked or spiked, whatever you want to call it. Now, the two big organisations that seem to be running the country now, I mean, okay, so obviously not Rishi Sunak and the Treasury, but certainly when it comes to the lockdowns, etc., the policies, are Sage and NervTag. Can you just give us an idea of who these people are?
Sage are, I'm not quite sure who appoints them. They're a group of presumably well-known scientists and epidemiologists and highly qualified doctors in their field who sit, presumably look at the evidence, and then advise the government. NervTag is just another expert committee of Department of Health and Social Care that do similar. I don't know whether they have any vested interests in any other outside organisations off the top of my head. I got the impression that particularly Sage were pushing the government to lock down quicker and sooner at the end of last year. politically, I think Boris Johnson was a bit opposed to it, but after their initial decision to open up for, I think it was 5 days over Christmas, and seeing that the number of cases were going up dramatically and subsequently and it affected hospitals quite badly, they had to do a bit of a U-turn. But as I say, whether these groups have any pressure from the vaccine lobby, I really don't know. I don't know the list of everyone on the committees, but Jeremy Farrar sits on Sage, and that's who I had got in contact with about ivermectin previously, who he was quite kind enough to respond to and pass my our paper on to Oxford. But again, that was mid-November, and I heard nothing back.
The trouble with people like him is he's involved in all sorts of commercial enterprises, including Genome Research Limited. These are people who are looking into, I would imagine that they have some sort of interest in these mRNA vaccines anyway. Then he's also been involved in the Francis Crick Institute and the Wellcome Foundation. I can remember going back a while. I think he was an American senator, maybe. I'm not sure if he was a senator, but anyway, he did a report in the States into powerful lobbies in America. Mm-hmm. And of course, the pharmaceutical lobby is a very powerful lobby. And what he explained was that they create these what they call stables of experts, stables of professionals, where they are basically all in singing from the same hymn sheet, a kind of group think, you know. So maybe that's what's going on. We do not know, but we're not privy to these things because there's private interest here, and it's very secretive.
Who appoints to Sage? I don't know. you've got to wonder, is it a government-appointed group or what?
Yeah, it'd be nice to know how these people get appointed. I think, you know, we ask questions also about who appoints the judges. You know, in our courts, that often it's really not, it's opaque. Anyway, look, I think we'd just finally ask you about, just to give us a bit of a picture of, you know, who you are and what you do. I just wondered, how long have you been practicing? What is your sort of basic career over the last, you know, whatever, 10 years? And what's your average day like?
Yes, so I've been qualified as a doctor since 2001, and the majority of my practice over the last for about 15 years has been in emergency medicine, or as maybe more traditionally known, accident and emergency. It's not quite as exciting as you might see on TV shows like Casualty or ER. So we basically the front line of the hospital, and deal with anything that might come in. That could be anything from major trauma to a major illness, or it could just be the worried well, someone coming in with something relatively minor that we've just got to reassure them. So it's kind of just dealing with a bit of everything, and just having a broad-based background in medicine.
Okay, and what's your average day like?
I don't think you can ever in emergency medicine say there's an average day. Some days you could have a low number of patients, other days you could be on the go all the time. So I think it's very difficult to say there's an average day.
All right. What about a normal day? There's no normal days either. Just take us through the sort of thing, you know, if you could take us through the sort of day you might be expecting tomorrow.
Well, I am working tomorrow, so I might go in. I'll take handover from the doctor who's on overnight. That might depend. There might not be any patients in the morning in the department, but there might be a few, and then I'll have to take handover, let them go home to bed because they've been on for 10 hours, and deal what's in the department, and then I'll just have to treat whatever patients come in. And I say that can be a variety of conditions presenting. The thing in our field is we never know what's going to walk through the door. It could be something, you know, very minor to something major. You know, someone who's been in a trauma, they've got severe bleeding or internal hemorrhage, to something, you know, to more minor conditions. And also we often see quite a number of mental health presentations nowadays, which takes up a fair degree of emergency department work.
Well, that's called care in the community. I remember Virginia Bottomley introducing that. Anyway, so Dr. Scott Mitchell, thanks very much for joining us. I wonder if you could just wind up by giving us websites wherever people can be following your work.
Yes, well, the main website, the group I'm attached to is the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, and the shortened form of that is flccc.net. The other group I'm working with Tess Laurie is the Evidence-Based Medical Consultancy Limited, which is www.e-bmc.co.uk. I think those are really the two groups that I'm outside of work attached to, working on this thing, and particularly with looking at ivermectin.
Now, I'm going to be a bit cheeky and ask you about Prince Philip, because looking at him, he's had a vaccine. They haven't told us which one, although only the Pfizer one was licensed when he had his vaccine, the COVID vaccine. 6 weeks later, he's in hospital. He's extremely ill. And the palace have told us it's nothing to do with the vaccine.
From my point of view, it would be difficult to say whether it's anything directly related to the vaccine, because I don't have all the facts. Usually the main adverse events from the vaccine are probably going to occur in the first few days. The main side effects can be, you know, almost typically some local arm ache at the site of the injection at the top of the arm, but some people go on to have more systemic symptoms such as fever, tiredness, headache, muscle ache. Let's say again, those generally occur within the first few days. I, as the population, have limited information on what is wrong with Prince Philip. They've just said he's got some infection. It's difficult to speculate on what that is, but I would gather it has probably taken a turn for the worse since he has been moved to hospitals for some reason. But I think it would be pure speculation to determine whether it was anything to do with the vaccine itself. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Uh-huh. Fine. Yeah, I mean, we're here to, we do speculation as well as facts, and we know there's a great big brick wall between the two. So anyway,
yeah.
Scott Mitchell, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, hope you don't mind me being a bit cheeky there.
That's,
I mean,
all
obviously
right.
we don't know anything really, do we? But I mean, from all my journalist friends are all saying, you know, it's the vaccine. Although, of course, they don't know, they will privately will say, this is what we're looking at, all the indications, this is what's going on. Anyway, I hope he manages to pull through, poor bloke.
Yeah, hopefully. Well,
make it through to his 100th birthday in, was it 3 or 4 months or something?
Well, I'm sure he's got all the best, supposedly the best doctors and whoever pondering over him. So, if he is going to pull through, he will. But as you say, he's nearly 100 years old, so things don't always work as well when you're getting to that age.
That's true. Well, I hope we managed to make it that far. All right. Anyway, cheers, Scott.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.